This week on RSBNB Update, we take a look at archaeology from the high-end efficiency meta, including best training methods, what to buy, and the big question of XP per hour. Easter is here with a new cosmetic currency event. We also have new toys from the Core Experience team, including Depth of Field and Object Highlighter. This is RSBNB Update, episode 772, recorded Thursday, April 9th, 2020. Meow, that's a gathering skill. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update this week. We're back. We're digging archaeology, I guess you could say, because we're doing lots of digging. I feel like that pun's been made way too many times last week, so shouldn't have made it again, should I, hey?
No, try it one more time, Shane, see if it goes any better this time.
No, that's okay, that's quite all right. But yes, as promised, we are going to be discussing the high end of the skill this week. This week we got one of Tanis's friends here joining us, Brew. I think you've been on the podcast or a bit in the past to talk about the efficiency side of the game, so welcome back.
Yeah, thank you for having me back, Shane.
Yeah. I think what's your RS name? Brew Through, I think it is, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And you have been in a race to get and go past 99 archaeology. And I think you got that on what? When did you get it? Thursday? Saturday?
Sunday.
Sunday? Yep. Okay. I don't know. I thought maybe I'd give you some credit there and say, oh, maybe he wants to say that he was truly the first to get it beyond everybody else, and there was no announcement made for it. But nonetheless, we're going to talk about the high end of archaeology, as in past 70 and beyond. And, you know, we also got some other stuff to talk about this week. We're going to go through that relatively quickly on that. But if you're joining us for the first time, you can find show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And, of course, I'm Shane12088 in game, and Tanis is Tanis79. So let's begin. It's Easter. And we're going to talk about the Easter event first, because – you know, some people don't like this event. They're calling it Grand Theft Coco, and it's a currency event that runs from April 8th to the 15th, and your whole purpose is to collect Easter eggs that are out and around the world to unlock some three Easter cosmetics, an Easter outfit, an Easter bunny follower, and some Easter bunny ears.
Now, Shane, the way you make that sound is, oh, they're out in the world. No. You're not on a little Easter egg hunt. Some guy walks up beside you, and next thing you know, you're covered in eggs everywhere. Wherever you were clicking, now you're clicking on eggs.
Yeah, and, you know, they're imps. They're imps. They appear. You also get what sounds like a bang, an explosive bang, every time they appear. And that's just immersion breaking, I have to say.
I don't know. It can get really cluttered really fast.
Especially if there's a large group of people. These excavation sites, some of them are spread out, but some of them are kind of tight. And with everybody's eggs popping up and nobody grabbing them, it does get a little bit cluttered.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, you have to get 10,000 in total. You have a week to do that. It's really not that hard. I've already completed half of it in, you know, just, you know, a day and a half's worth of playing session on that. So it's not as though it's a monumentous task in order to do. It's just kind of annoying. I guess that's the way I'd say on that front.
And I agree.
You know, I think that this is what we get when we ask for community events and holiday events without, you know, necessarily having a mini quest behind them. Because, you know, I seem to distinctly remember there being a discussion in the past that people want a community event for all the holidays, even if it's something minor. And lo and behold, this is something minor.
It's very minor. It's almost like a currency collecting. But
yeah, that's what it is.
It's annoying. Yeah, but I mean, currency collecting, it just goes in your pouch and stuff. It doesn't, you know, you don't have this extra step like you do now. And I've said it, I mean, I think I say it every year. Honestly, I think we would be fine with just a Christmas and a Halloween. I don't think we need an Easter event.
Yeah.
Maybe a spring festival or something, but I don't think we need an Easter event.
I like Easter events because they're one of the core ones. You know, Easter, Halloween, and Christmas, those are the three main ones. And I think they are needed. What I actually do want to draw attention to is that when you go and talk to the Easter Bunny and you hand your eggs in, that's one thing. But you can also hand them in to the two women who are right next to the Easter Bunny. And that's this event's version of getting mystery boxes. And, you know, if you go through the chat options on these people, it turns out that they're two females who are actually in a relationship together, and they refer to the character in the they pronoun, which is something that Jagex said they were going to do to foster diversity through this. And, you know, quite frankly, I'm a little bit shocked and surprised that the internet isn't blowing up over this.
I'm shocked and surprised that you think anyone read that.
Yeah, and I mean, if you do read it, it's quite clear.
Yeah.
Well, apparently, if you got the 10K with the Easter Bunny you can spend, but if you spend 10 more K in her shop, you actually unlock a title, either The Poached after your name or Hard Boiled before your name.
All right, so two different ways that you can get your eggs then. Yeah. That's fine.
That's cool. You could be the poached. Like, so if you ever have to jump clans, you can roll in with the poached title.
Or if you're a big tiger that just got poached in big game hunting.
Or a big husband.
Yeah, you know, that could be.
I see we're having ramifications roll over from last week's pick of the week.
We are. It's the whole country, Shane.
Yeah, it seems to be a pop culture hit that people are definitely listening to on that. But I don't really have anything else left to say on the Easter event except that it's immersion breaking. And, I mean, we got more for Valentine's Day with the Once Upon a Slime quest.
Yes, very, very much so.
Yeah. All right. I'm good to move on from Easter then and talk about the core experience updates that we got this week, in particular object highlighting, canopy removal, and depth of field.
Yes.
Are you?
Let's go.
Are you using either of these, object highlighting, canopy removal, or depth of field?
Dude, the object highlighting is way more impactful than I ever thought it was going to be.
Right.
I didn't think nothing of it from that live stream.
Because we couldn't see it on the stream because of the compression.
But it's made everything easier for me to like click on. Like, I can even tell who are NPCs and who are not.
Yeah.
Now, like, because there's an outline. Like, it's really
NPCs
nice.
Highlight as yellow, objects as blue, and attackables as red. And I mean, like you said, you really don't anticipate that you're going to need this, but it helps. I haven't decided if I'm going to keep it on yet because, I mean, sure, it's nice to see for quests and whatnot, but I don't know if I need it personally. Are you going to keep it?
Oh, I'm definitely keeping it. I mean, it's just real helpful for me. Like, it's a lot easier to see like where I can click and stuff like that. Like, it's really helpful.
All right. How about you, Brew?
Yeah, I as well. I think it's nice. I've been using it, and I know the day it dropped, a lot of people had trying to figure out how to toggle it off, and they didn't really care for it. But I think it has definitely helped in certain aspects of the game for
sure. And speaking of that, you can actually just turn it off in the main graphical settings. There's an option where you can turn off depth of field. The camera fade that we got back last year, tree canopy fade, and mouse over highlighting, of course, that we're talking about right now, all these can be turned off in your game settings. And, you know, it's a nice accessibility update. And even on mobile, it will ping if you have an active daily challenge highlighted. So it'll, like, ping it on the screen to where exactly you need to go, which is perfect given the fact that, you know, we're seeing the game move more and more towards the mobile side. So I, like we said, we really couldn't see it, but it definitely looks like this is the unsung hero of this update. So,
oh, for sure, because, I mean, honestly, like the tree canopy stuff, like that should have been, I mean, that should have been nice. I expected a bigger impact,
yeah,
and it didn't.
The circle for that one is too small. And, I mean, yes, if anybody wants to see what this does, just run into McRubber's Wood and you'll see it, or the Lost Grove.
But I have a feeling I still would have been clear cutting even with this, because it's just not.
Yeah, and I mean, it's so tiny that even for me, I don't see a benefit to the tree canopy removal one. I think the vignette needs to be made bigger, and I realize that might be a fancy word. That's probably a word I've never used before, but I think that's the right way to describe it: the vignette around your character.
Sure.
Okay. So we're not sold on that one yet, but depth of field. Did you turn this one on or no?
Well, they were all came on, right? Like, because no. I didn't have to turn the outline.
I didn't have any of them on this week, and my settings don't seem to be able to stick.
Oh, that's weird, because like I didn't change anything with my settings, and I have outlining and canopy and all.
Okay.
All on.
All right.
Might as well came toggled on.
Okay, interesting. Maybe I turned them off and now I'm having settings problems with this. But depth of field just adds a bit of a blur towards the background of objects that are further away. I don't know how exactly they're implementing it, but
I don't care for anything that makes it blurry, right? Like, I got
yeah,
enough,
like,
I got
it, like it blurs the background
without artificial blurriness.
Yeah, it's supposed to make it feel like that stuff in the background is further away. For those on the video version, you can see what it looks like on right now. And then if you turn it off, everything in the background just, you know, instantly clears up and looks as we've always had it. And, you know, I think it's really useful for areas that are new and have a great level of object fidelity to them. And what I mean by that is detail in the far distance. And of course, what we're talking about here are dig sites like Everlight and of course Anachronia. Do you remember last year when Mod Shawnee showed this off, when he was showing off Anachronia? First we saw depth of field. I think it looks better on Anachronia than it looks in the old game world. And it looks better at the new dig sites too. So
I guess that's
my sense on it. And it's, you know, it's just going to add so much more to the cinematic nature of how RS looks today. And I think that's a good thing. And if your computer can run it, you make the decision on your own if you want to have it on, and you go from there. So I haven't decided yet on depth of field, but I'm definitely no on the canopy removal, and I'll probably keep the object outlining on. And, you know, these were three of the things we saw from RuneFest. We know they're working on other things too, like the path prediction. We saw an update not too long ago on that. So it's that might be something we could also look forward to. And the core experience team, as you can see here, is obviously making huge strides and advancements to just make RS feel like a more modern game, I think. And I think that's what we take away from this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get to the meat of the matter that everybody's been wanting then.
We got the meat.
We talked about Easter. We talked about the new methods of core experience with depth of field and object outlining and canopy removal. But what you guys are probably wondering, and you probably came to this podcast to hear about, is how does archaeology work at the high levels? So we're going to have that discussion. And Brew, you got 99. I know, Tanis, you and I were looking. I said, we got to have someone on who's 99. And as soon as I said that, you knew the right person. You set this up for this week.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There was no doubt in my mind. I mean, Bruce was one of the highest just hard-hitting skillers I know. He's, you know, a 5'4". I knew he was going to be in the race. And as long as it wasn't taken away from anything, I was going to try to get him on the show, that's for sure.
So, Brew, tell us a bit about yourself. What have you done with past skills, and, you know, what encouraged you to push so hard at archaeology?
I've just been playing for a while, and I just kind of love the progression of. And once I hit 5.4, and I was kind of sitting around waiting for a new skill to be released, so I'd come back and do some clues and make a little money and do this, that. And when I heard archaeology was coming, I figured it was probably one of the best times to come back. Everybody's working from home. The kids are home. I got the time to put into it. You know, why not?
Yeah, perfect time for a new skill to come out. Currently, as of recording, you're level 104, rank 262. We'll see where that goes in the coming days. So you're about quarter of the way to level 120 with that, give or take. So what we want to talk about is how exactly archaeology is going to be trained from an efficiency perspective. And what we mean by that is, how does the XP scale up between the various levels in the skill? And we just talked about this on our monthly bit with Invention. We were told when Invention came out, we needed a new skill curve because it would make it so that there would be less grind between levels. We'll also talk about how XP per hour is factored in at all the different levels and where that starts to pick up. XP per GP, if you want to spend on it, how much it costs, and if there's any gaps in all the various unlocks at the skill. So I think where we can start, and let's just start, and I realize this isn't true high level, but let's just start at the 70 to 80 band range of the skill. And this is, of course, what I'm interested in, because this is where I'm going to be passing. I'm currently level 68 as of recording. So what would your advice be to someone who is closing in on the 70s and wants to make a true push for 99 now that they've discovered that, hey, I like the way this skill works and I like the way this skill feels? What should they be doing in the 70 to 80 range, and how does the XP look? And we'll, of course, pepper all these references in as we get through there.
So I didn't really notice a big increase in XP until the mid 80s.
All right.
But I did notice that at, I don't think it matters what level you are in this skill. It's simple. You go and you collect artifacts and you restore them. Now, if you choose to collect artifacts and buy your materials, you're going to get it a little bit quicker. If you choose to collect your artifacts and gather materials in the process, and then if you're missing a few here and there, go hit up a cache or stay at the excavation site. That's also an option. I did appreciate the XP per hour, per se, for the first maybe 60 or 70 levels. I think we have too many quick, hard-hitting, I can buy it and speed it up skills.
Yeah.
I do like the kind of capped at 100K an hour, 200K an hour. As you start progressing up past 99, up to 120, I think they're kind of hitting around 500K. And I think that's the perfect kind of like spot for a skill like this. You don't want it to be too fast. You don't want the people who have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bills to just fly right through it. There's still time locked on the artifact aspect. You can't buy artifacts.
And that's what we said in the past, is that it seems as though 500 to 700K is a sweet spot for post-99 training and all these skills. And I know, Tanis, you disagree with me when they knocked the turtles down. But I realize saying that here, I'm probably poking a hornet's nest, and that's a discussion for another day
of you here. Not turtles, just...
Well, I finished it, so I don't care what it is. Yeah, to heal him back.
So I guess then we can just say that you said it starts to pick up around the mid-80s. So would it be a fair assessment to say that for anybody who's leveling up and working through from, you know, let's just say extend it all the way back to from the end of the tutorial to the mid-80s, that, you know, just stay at whatever excavation site is the best for your level?
Exactly. As you unlock a new site, go and excavate there. That's where your best XP per hour is. However, some levels, I think 81, you unlock three sites at or three excavation locations at three different sites.
Yeah.
I pushed past it. I didn't visit the other ones, and I ended up having to revisit at a higher level to finish my collections.
Right.
So definitely, so say you unlock three different sites.
Finish the collections sure for those sites that you can.
Correct. Yeah. Before you just stay at one spot the rest of the time.
And, you know, this is what I've found as well in my, what I'll call casual leveling of the skill over the last week and a half, is that if you complete the collections, you complete the mysteries that you have unlocked, and then you just spend a little bit of extra time here and there, you're going to have, you know, enough XP to get to all the various levels. It's not like you're going to be striving and thirsting for XP. I think the only time I felt that was the high 50s and early 60s. And since then, it's been perfect. You know, at level 68, I headed to the Infernal Source to work on the Chaos Stars and Spike Dog Collars down there. And I assume at level 69, I'll go back to Everlight for the Dominion Games podium. And one question I have with this, and I've seen it in some of the recent artifacts, are there many dig sites and excavation sites out there where you're not given all the materials you need at that excavation site? You need to bounce around between excavation sites to get the materials to restore said artifact.
Yeah, so like for example, right now, the one I'm at, it gives me every item I need to restore every artifact I'm getting.
Which one are you at, out of curiosity?
Hellfire Forge.
All right.
And so it's giving me all the materials I need to restore all three artifacts that I will obtain here, minus one. So I'm not sure what exact one for this level, but for my previous level, for example, I was at the Warforge. And I was getting the Malachite and the Marks of War, or the Marks of the K word, because I don't know how to pronounce that, and so on. But they weren't giving me White Oak. So I then had to go buy White Oak for all of the artifacts that I had collected.
All right. And I mean, with that, you either go to the cache or you buy on the exchange. And I think that's probably a simple choice to make, depending on how you feel about spending money on the skill. And we'll be touching on this as we move through the entire part of this, and we'll find that it's very self-sufficient. You'll feel like you're being an Iron Man some of the times when you're doing this. All right. So that's going to be the method that you're going to take probably throughout. Would you say the majority of the skill, just excavate the highest site that you can in terms mm-hmm. of what's available to you? All right.
Right. Now, starting out, it was a little rough because like at 70, when you unlock the Storm Guard.
Yeah.
When I hit 70, there was very few people up there. And there was not enough people gathering materials and selling them for everybody interested in buying them. So the prices for these certain materials, like the Stormguard steel and the Wings of War, they were astronomical. So instead of staying at that level, I had to drop back a few to maybe like the Zeros area.
Okay.
But for now, I think there's plenty of people in every location where you really don't have to worry about that.
So in effect, the supply for all these materials is indeed starting to fill out on that.
Yes, yep, for sure.
Now, you mentioned that in the mid-80s, the XP per hour starts to jump up. What would you say, or when would you say you exactly noticed that, and by how much of a magnitude was that?
Well, so prior to 80, you notice it's like you go here and you're here for 3-4 levels.
Right.
Around the 80 mark, you start to notice at every level, minus a few here or there, you will unlock a new look. So like at 83, you're at the Warforge, and then at 84, you shoot back to Everlight, I think that's right. And then at 85, you shoot to Stormguard.
Right.
And so you're kind of all over the place. And at that point, when I started having a new location at every level, I felt like the XP started to scale.
All right. And, you know, with that, like, let's just, for example, have a look at the one from level 85 saying one of the artifacts is the Hawkeye Lens Multi-Vision Scope. Certainly a mouthful there on that. You get 8.9K XP for restoring that. You need only Stormguard Steel and Orphan Glass for that. And that seems like a fairly simple recipe on that. front. Because you're going to be getting Orthon glass from the very beginning. And if you're not using that much, you're going to be able to pick it up. And you're going to also have been collecting Stormguard steel since level 70. So you can kind of start to see the lens that's working its way in here. Tanis, do you have any questions for Brew going up to the mid-80s at all?
No, not at this point.
All right. What would you say was your favorite level range or excavation site in the mid 80s?
Let's see, I was really got into the Kyrdet place, and there's been a lot of talk whether that's the best all around spot because the batteries that you get. And you can turn these batteries in for XP, and there's the whole calculator that you can do now and figure out how much XP per battery that you're gathering. And so that adds, you know, a little bit more XP per hour.
Yeah, and fun note on that, when you actually turn your batteries in, you get more if you hand in more batteries at one time.
Exactly.
Rather than just handing in, you know, boop, 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 one at a time, and there you go on that. So
is that not a percent? Boost then?
Like I don't exactly know what it is. Brew, do you know, is it linear in terms of the batteries that you get, or how does that scale up in terms of how much you get?
How many batteries you get while excavating?
Or I mean, sorry, for handing in. How does the XP work for that, handing the batteries in?
Oh, so depending on your archaeology level, and
all
then
right. Depending
on...
Oh, I see the calculator here on the wiki. Okay.
Yeah, so I think you get if you turn in 10 or more, you get 10% more. If you turn 100 in, I feel like it's 20%. And then I think that's the cap. So if you have like 98 batteries, it's better to go and grind out two more real quick.
Right. I said if you're 85 and you gave 10 batteries, you would get 24. You get 27.05 experience, but the base on that would be 24.59, and the boost being because you put so many batteries in, you get an additional 10%. Now, instead, if assume you were 85 and you gave 100 batteries, you'd get a base of the same 24,592, just multiplied by a factor of 10. But because you gave the extra 90 batteries on that, you would get from that 29,500 experience for powering that.
And right.
See, this is something I think many people haven't realized here on this. And, you know, just using the calculator, you keep putting in numbers here. The maximum is indeed 20% that you would get for handing those in. And this also goes back to research, because some of the research assignments for Career Ed also give you batteries.
And some of the collections also give you batteries as rewards for completing the Zerosian guy.
But you know what
think of his name.
Dr. Navinick. You know what the downside of that is, though, and this is something people will realize, is that you can't actually bank the batteries.
Yeah, it kind of sucks.
Between that and your tomes, that was the kind of the rush up to the 99. So your batteries stop at level 98. It doesn't scale past 98. Your tomes, however, do.
Ooh.
So if you have a stack of batteries at 98, there's no point in holding on to them until I hit 119, because I'll get more. It doesn't work like that. But the tomes, however, do. And the tome XP, based on one level versus the other, like there's certain points where you get one more level and the XP is a whole lot more than previous, or just like the small incremental increase. And so I was holding my tomes and batteries as long as I could in my inventory. And that became a huge struggle. But in the end, it was worth it, because instead of getting, you know, 5K XP, I turned it in for 35K XP.
All right, so that's just in general a tip, is if you're working in Kyrdet, you get batteries when it's more than 10, or if you're going to be there for the long haul, give it when it's more than 100. So
right.
That's good, and that's a good tip for training on this band.
Yeah, if you can hold on to your tombs, it drives me crazy.
I know it's not feasible for a lot of people to just keep them in the inventory, but I mean, this is all I'm doing, so.
Right, right. And we'll get to that after. And I'll just make a change in the notes here to move that segment to after we talk about all the various level bands. Is there anything notable in the 90 to 99 range in terms of excavation sites or the way XP jumps?
I think it was pretty much between the 86 to about 97 is when they were kind of stagnant around 150 to 200K, at least for me. And 97, I noticed a giant increase, and to the point now, I think I'm getting roughly 325, 350, following Sprite and not gathering any extra material and buying my material. I'm getting roughly 325, 350K an hour.
All right. So that's about 200K or so in the 86 to 97 range, and then 350K beyond 99 and 98 with that. What would you say the XP per hour is below 87 in the 80s?
I wasn't really testing it, so I couldn't give you a definite answer. But the easy way to figure out your XP per hour is to kind of glance at how many artifacts you gather per hour. And then multiply that by the amount of artifacts or XP, and then add your excavation XP. And that kind of give you a little rough XP per hour.
Yeah, a bit of a back of the envelope calculation on that.
Exactly. And if you are gathering your material, of course, you have to throw that in. There's a lot of if ands and buts to throw into it.
Yeah, it's certainly more involved than woodcutting or divination in that regard. Because you know we mentioned last week on the podcast talking about the core game loop of this. This is a circular train where you can get off or get on wherever you want with it. And
exactly. You
know you can buy the materials. You can go back to a material cache and pick them up, or you can just stay at the excavation site, which would increase the amount of XP you get from excavating. So there's so many, like you said, if ands and buts with this that I think this is the diversity that we're seeing with the skill that everybody absolutely loves with this, that even the JMods were talking about when they were producing it. So before we jump to the high end, you know, north of 99 bit, I want to talk about the Matics that you use throughout all of these. And we need to, you know, make this abundantly clear for people is that when you hit 60, you pretty much want a Dragon Matic, right?
Yep, for sure, for sure. That augmentation on is a huge scale.
Yeah, I assume honed is what you probably want. I'm not sure what else you'd want to put on it.
Yep, as high of honed as you can. I know a lot of people rushing the XP where money isn't an issue are using Furnace. The higher Furnace 3 and 4 are a little bit too much GP per hour or GP per XP for me. And it didn't really seem worth, so I swapped out Furnace for Imsold.
Which can bank which items, right?
Right, at the cost of prayer points. And with the little ancient elven ritual shard, you pop that every 5 minutes and don't have to worry about prayer. So it's kind of just extending the life of your porters.
Neat, neat. You know, and one, I guess, question that comes off of that, with the Furnace perk, if you're using that, does that just eat up materials, or can it eat up artifact too for XP?
No, it's just materials.
Okay, good. I was a bit worried about that. All right, good to know. And the reason, of course, you want to go for Dragon is because you'll take a penalty in terms of the stats, in terms of the precision, and what's the other mechanic of the Matic? I forget its name.
Focus.
Precision and focus on it. If you go with the Smithed ones. So you definitely want to go at 60 for the Dragon Matic and at 70 for the Crystals. And then you can go for Imkando at 80, but Crystal, you said, was supposed to be good until 90?
Technically, yes. It's good up until 90. So when you unlock the Warforge, you can start getting your Imkando pieces. But it's deep inside the Warforge to the point where you need 83 to get past the barrier to get into the main dig site.
Right.
And then you need 80, they originally thought it was 89 for the final key. And they found out later that you could actually get it from the material caches up north.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So technically you can get the MKamdo as early as 81 with a boost.
And that would, and I can imagine just the amount that that would provide to you in terms of being able to, you know, just excavate faster because, you know,
exactly.
You go from a precision of 60 with the crystal and a focus of 5 up to the next level of having precision of 70 and focus of 6 with the MKamdo. And, you know, and this is one of the biggest benefits that you can get when leveling is that if you go back to a dig site, and you'll see this if, you know, for example, you're in your 60s and you decide you want to go back and complete Ceridoman 1, one of the very popular collections. I've done this one, I think, 3 times now at this point myself. You're going to definitely notice that your Dragonmatic is going to excavate a lot faster. So having that MKamdo-matic and excavating at the tier 80s is going to help you a lot with that. And, you know, like you said, technically you could wait and you could use crystal up until 90, but if you unlock that, you said 83, right? To be able to unlock the full thing?
Yep. One of the keys is locked behind an excavation site inside that requires 83.
All right. Fair enough.
You can boost from 81 if you, you don't want to get in there with the T's and go to town,
sure.
But, it's a rough one.
Yeah. Yeah. What material cache is that locked behind? That seems weird that they'd lock that behind a material cache. All right, we'll get our data people to sort that out, and we'll make a mention of that in the complete show notes, which you can find at update.rsbnb.com. And then 90, you keep using that in Kando. And all the way to 99, you can use a Matic of Space and Time, which is formed the same way that you make the Pickaxe of Earth and Song, Crystal Matic, MKamdo Matic, and an Energized Meteorite Shard, whatever the hell that is. I don't know where you get that from. Apparently the Archaeology Guild shop for 250,000 Kronos. Look at what we got ahead of us, Tannis, here.
It's a steep one. But yeah, you'll learn about what it is. Once you buy it, they will not let you use it. You have to actually do a research mission.
Oh, good.
And your researchers will come back with all of the data you need to know. I'll leave that one to you to find out.
Then we have Guildmaster Tony's, which I've seen a few get drops on.
Yeah, that's the Tetra Compass reward, right?
Yep. You apparently get a key and you unlock the display case in the guild. Apparently, some of the first ones sold for upwards of 30 billion GP.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a safe one.
I'm wondering who in our podcast community is going to be the first to get that.
It's coming down to a reasonable price. Right over 10, I think, the last one traded for.
Well, it's still a lot for a piece of equipment, 10 billion.
The advantage it gives you is pretty astronomical. I don't know if it's worth for common folk like us, but if you're racing, number one right now had one prior to number two or three obtaining one, and he shot ahead so far to the point where it's almost mathematically impossible for them to catch.
He's got 85 precision and 9 focus, whereas the space and time has 80 precision and 7 focus.
And it's roughly a 10 to 15% increase, the XP that he's getting, just by having that one singular item. Now, I've heard that the guy number one had trillions. Didn't know that was a thing in this game, but apparently it is. So that's, I don't know. That's him. Just little money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you could get lucky with the compass, right?
Yeah.
Never know.
We don't know how rare it is yet. We're thinking HSR rare.
Oh, even on the compass?
No. Just in general, yeah. Because it's a hero drop, right? Like HSR. And
It's starting Tavius to kind of fishing look rod. Like right along the Orlando Smith and a map.
Yeah, that's it.
It's roughly the same.
Yeah, something like that. All right, so we've gone through the 80s, 90s. We talked about the XP per hour on that as well. Stick with your top excavation sites. I keep wanting to call them dig sites there. Listeners will probably note on that. What did we say the XP rates for the 90s were? Around 200-ish, I think you said, right?
200-ish until 97, okay. Yep.
That's pretty good. I think I feel good about that.
I do as well. I think it's the sweet spot for a gathering skill. It's not like a div prior to cache and all that, but it's not like a, you know, an invention today. I think max or over a mil XP per hour would have been.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have been handled well by the majority of the community.
And what's the highest you've seen with where you're at right now at 104?
350. I can comfortably get that per hour. Now that's buying materials. So if you gather materials, of course, you're going to see a whole lot less. I'm getting roughly 105 to 110K an hour excavating, roughly 8.5 artifacts per hour.
Okay.
And I think right now with my outfit boost, I'm getting 24,733 XP per artifact with the 6% assistant boost or associate, whenever you unlock the first outfit.
Yeah. 6%, just the standard archaeology outfit, which unlocks at level 70. Mm-hmm. All right. And of course you also have the master outfit at level 99, which does what, you know, we thought it would. It would give an extra 7% success chance, I think, in excavating and finding artifacts, which is good. That'll speed your way up. Are you working on getting that, the master archaeology outfit?
Yeah, I've got that in the Matic.
Good.
It was a quality of life. That outfit is so nice with the boost. And then the teleports, I mean, it's so nice for lazy people like me.
Yeah, to the dig sites and collectors, because we need to use the archaeology log now and teleport back to the guild and then use the map table. Exactly. There you go.
And so it's just a quick right-click teleport collector, and then all the collectors are listed. It also has a quick teleport option where you can set. So say I'm training in Everlight. I have a quick teleport option that I don't even have to go through the prompt. It just throws me right there, which is very nice.
Nice, nice. All right, so north of 100, you said that 300K-ish mark that you're seeing would be if you're buying materials. And what do you determine and how do you determine when to buy material and when not to?
If I need it, I buy it. That's how I determine.
All right.
But with the the manual boost that you can buy in the work or the guild shop, that little extra boost of materials per hour, as well as the water fiends, I found I do need to buy materials. It's not nearly as much. So if you look at an item and it requires, you know, 30 samite silk and 34 gold rings, it's not. You don't have to go buy that because you're also gathering that as you're excavating.
Right.
And so there's a few off the top that you have to, you know, go and spend a little money here, a little money there. But yeah, if I don't have it, I buy it. I don't go and.
All right. How much money would you say you've sunk on the skill since launch, if I can ask that?
Have I sunk on it? Oh, yeah, I'm at the bottom of the ocean. Okay. I'm down. Yeah, I've sunk quite a bit. Now, the first few days, I would shoot up, and then I would ease back and try to make some of my funds back from the shoot up. So I have recovered some of it, but the Dragonmatic, for example, the two of those that you need, you're not getting that back.
North of 110 mil today, still.
Yep, they were 800 mil the first few, and then 400 mil. I heard a couple people buy. It got down to 160, and I said that's as low as I'm willing to let it go because I didn't know when it was going to shoot back north. So Outback.
They were below 100 for a bit. I should have picked them up then, but I waited until the next day, and they shot up to 125 again.
Yep.
So it's going to be this constant bounce back and forth, because they are going to be needed as more people approach that 60 band. All right. So what would you say was the hardest rung or hardest level range in terms of maybe having gaps in the unlocks?
I couldn't tell you, to be honest with you. Are you talking about like the guild met, the shop unlocks?
Well, there's the shop unlocks, and then I guess you'd...
Gaps between archaeology excavation sites or just new things that don't get unlocked in skill. Yeah.
So I noticed at the lower levels where they were, huge gaps, and you would go and camp there. And for the first level or two, it seemed like it was great. And then you would start getting, 5K more XP per level, 10K more XP per level. And you were still at that same spot giving, 3K per artifact. And you could kind of tell in that last level how slow it was. And I've noticed a lot of people are boosting with the T. So say at level 81, you unlock a place and you don't unlock another place until 83. At 82, people would boost and go to the 83 spot just to increase their XP per hour. I personally never did that.
Yeah, that seems like that'd be an expensive endeavor.
Correct, yep.
I also want to just note here that in terms of things, if you're if you're looking to increase archaeology skill on that, the Ring of Whispers gives a +3 invisible boost to gathering skills, archaeology included, from Sliske's endgame. So there's that as an option as well.
Good old whispers.
Yeah. So it's a question.
Gatherer's best friend.
I mean, do you want to use that, or do you want to go for the Seren spirits with Grace of the Elves?
So until you unlock the relic for the Luck of the Dwarf, you're better off staying with the Ring of Will, or the Luck Ring, due to your tone.
Oh, I am so stupid. I was looking for a reason to use that relic. And here it is. Because I was thinking, if you're going to go for luck, I mean, if you're in combat, you might want a combat ring. But I was struggling to think of a time outside of combat that you would want to use that, and here it is.
It is any gathering skill. It's now best in slot, because you used to, am I going to wear my Grace of the Elves and Luck of the Dwarves and go for the Seren Spirits, or am I going to wear this and the Necklace of Shadow, whatever it's called. But this now opens the door to, I can always have my Luck Ring
on. Does that Manifested Knowledge also work for archaeology, that two-piece set?
No.
Okay, good.
But I'm talking about other gathering skills.
Right, sure. All right. Divination, farming.
Exactly.
Fishing, hunter, and archaeology, I think they say. I don't know why mine is.
Have your luck there. And have the Grace of the Elves on, so you can have the best of everything.
All right. That's a good number of skills. I'm glad we found the answer to that. I don't know if that was in pre-show last week or some other time we were discussing it, but that was definitely one of my burning questions. So I'm glad we got an answer to that one. All right. So pivoting back to this, dare I ask about XP per GP at any of these level ranges?
That's if like asking buying a woman how old she is. You don't do that.
Well, I'm going to ask. How bad is 80 to 90?
If you're buying materials, it can get expensive. It's kind of like something you just know it's there. You don't look at it. You buy it. You don't look at how much you spent. You just keep going. It's up there. It's definitely one of the most expensive skills, of course, because it's just come out. The prices are inflated. But it's mighty expensive. Some relics artifacts, I spent upwards of a mil on one artifact. So it's up there.
And this is what you were talking about, Tannis, the race with the live streamers and all the famous people on top. They were running into this problem because the amount of money they would have had to spend in the early race, it was more economical for them to go out and gather these materials on their own.
Yeah, I figured you'd be all excited, Shane, because I figured this is like the only time I've ever seen a trickle-down economy actually work, because they just don't care how much money they're spending, so everybody gets a little piece, you know? But not realistic, I don't think.
RuneScape is good for their trickle-down economy stuff. We will give them that. What about the 90 to 99 range? Just give me a ballpark figure for how much that would cost per hour if you were doing that. If you were just buying the artifacts, or like you said, or were you just not paying attention?
I wasn't paying attention.
Okay.
All right. It's a lot. It's a lot.
All right. So
and if you decide to use the boost from the workshop, the T's and the monocles are kind of paired up perfectly, because the monocles will give you an increase by 20%, and then your XP is now also multiplied by 50%, and so that will shoot your XP per hour up tremendously, even if you just use monocles alone. But now that costs 2,000 chronotes apiece, and last I bought, they were roughly about a K, so we're talking two mil per boost, lasts for 20 minutes. You have two boosts going. That's 4 mil every 20 minutes. And now how many times can you use 20 minutes and 60 minutes, class? That's 3. This is extremely expensive. I use it up to 99. I cannot continue to afford it right now. The prices are dropping overnight. They, I think, plummeted to like 950. I think now they're around 800, so I think the bots got wind of the Zeros One log, and I've just been spent.
Sheesh.
And that's in boost, Shane. That's not your materials. They don't give you materials for coming in with the T's and the
boosts. I know.
12 mil an hour and soul.
And boosts. Yeah.
And boot. Yeah.
All righty, listeners, there you go. If anybody is deluded enough who is listening to think that you're going to do this on a less than billion GP cash stack, have fun. I know there's a few out there listening right now. But I think the next place I want to go with this, since we talked about XP per hours and just the fact that it's just such a nice skill in terms of moving you between all the levels and ensuring that you're always getting the best XP and GP per hour. And there's very few excavation sites out there I've found where you don't get the materials that you need. So that's just a perfect thing to be doing. And combining that with mysteries and collections, it's just so full. And that goes into what we talked about last week, how it's really that showroom finish kind of skill on that front. And I think the next thing we need to talk about is archaeology, a money-making skill. I mean, the answer from this is yes, but the question is, would you want to do that instead of actually training and getting XP?
Well, that's a choice, right? But there's so many ways in archaeology, and it's constant. I mean, obviously, we're only 2 weeks in, so it's changing a lot. But even when it all settles, you're going to have a lot of choice in how you want to make GP. Mats will still be worth money, but it's going to be worth more money depending on the like level bands the majority of people are at.
And
so it's real dependent on that.
For me, that tells me that the way that the people work, most people, you know, in the first 6 months of the skill, you guys aren't going to believe this listening to this, but most people, if you look at the entire RuneScape community as an average, will hover in the 50 to 60 range. And the high level for the first 6 months will be in the 70 range. That's just the way it works with new skill launches. So my sense is that the materials in the 60 to 70 range will be really good to farm, as well as the ones that you need to power the Tetra compasses. So that's all the different colors. So the malachite green, the armadillion yellow, the cadmium red, the cobalt blue, and I'm forgetting the name of the purple one.
Tyrian
purple. There we are.
Beautiful thing about this skill is I really appreciate you never outgrow a material. So the same ones that you're using for, say, level 20 when you're in the Infernal Source is the same materials that you're also using at level 118 to, you know, redo, like, I think it's the Cholula stones or whatever for at level 118 for all that XP.
Oh, wow.
It's the same material. So you're at level 118, you're still using White Oak. You're still using Gold Rune. You're still using Orthon Glass. It's the same materials. Now, the only difference is, of course, the amount. But I do appreciate that the materials go along with the skill rather than everybody's done with level 50 and below. So Samite Silk costs nothing now.
Right.
You can look at you still use Samite Silk at level 118 right there. So,
and this is why archaeology is a gathering skill, because someone who is just starting out can go gather these and sell them to someone who is level 118.
Exactly. Yeah. And on release, the material caches, a few people I've been talking to, the material caches at lower levels, the XP was greater than actually excavating and renewing artifacts.
You know, I actually noticed that when I was in the 20s. I went to go check out a material cache, yep. And I thought to myself, this feels faster than excavating. Can it be?
It is. And I think it's mainly because, of course, you're getting XP the entire time rather than one XP here and there and then a giant boost. But you didn't have as much competition because people didn't know what to do. Now, material caches are World 84 Combat Academy. You will get spit on. You will get harassed.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid your main account. Do not talk. Do not let the Iron Men know. Sorry for Iron Men listeners, but they have been extremely toxic, apparently, to the mainscapers.
And that was like one of the very few problems I think the skill has dealt with was the material caches being a competitive source, and then having the misfortune of those DOS attacks before the skill drops. So now you had people that were getting locked out of the game because they had to jump around to try to find an open cache. And that...
Well, that joke's on them. It's actually faster to wait for the cache to respawn.
Right, but it sucks if it happened to you,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because they were 6-hour lockouts.
Yeah. Yeah, so... but see, that's just one... See, that's why I think it's so what's so great about archaeology. That's just one aspect of money-making, right? There's... I mean, you could make money through ancient summoning if you want to be doing... making water fiends and stuff. You can make money collecting... Well, I don't know. It's lower now, but you can still collect, like, those journal... Or is it journal? The blueprint pages, right, Brew?
Yeah.
There's so many different areas of money making within the skill.
Yeah, waterfin familiars. Let's see what those are going for right now. Because, you know, that's probably also something we didn't mention is that once you unlock those, or if you're willing to purchase them, you're going to want one of those familiars out because they have a chance of doubling artifacts and materials.
Yeah, at all times. You want to find out.
And even if you're buying them, you will get your money back plus some with the materials you gather from the water fiend itself. So it's really, there's really no reason not to be using one. They pay for themselves, and then the chance that the artifact can be doubled. I mean, it's a win-win situation at that point. I think they're roughly around 120 right now. But I've had mine right now, for example, up for 18 minutes, and I have 12 items in it. So even if they sold for, 10K a piece, I made my money back. It's 12 minutes in, so – or 18 minutes in, excuse me.
Yeah, and, you know, another knock-on effect we're seeing with this is that divination energy and the porters are also shooting up because of this, because, you know, people want to use their porters with this skill. And, you know, previously, you know, it was okay. They're good to use, but there are just so many of those sites out there that are far away from a deposit stand that you probably want to be using a porter. So there's that as well.
I heeded JX's warning to need porter charges. So I was able to scoop them up prior to release when they were still a
nice.
I have a nice stack sitting in the bank. So
how many did you pick up?
I made roughly 750,000 charge. So I hopefully will never have to make them again.
All right. Fair enough. But yeah, material caches too. Like they said, it's basically wood cutting in terms of how they work. And, you know, I think to any woodcutter out there that you would absolutely love if you could have this level of diversity in just the woodcutting scale. And we got that here as one, you know, plank of archaeology here with that. So that's nice as well. So it definitely can be a money-making skill. And there's just so many places you can do that, that it's just a matter of looking for them. It can be the materials. It can be the water fans. It can be the tetra compasses, I think.
You could even sift sand.
Sifting sand.
Sifting sand is like 5 mil an hour right now. It's crazy. At the level 42 saltwater mud, make 5 mil an hour sifting sand.
Yeah, I had a question about that on the weekend. If you're sifting sand, does the quality of material you get from it go up as your level increases?
Correct. So say you unlock the saltwater mud at 42. I think you only have the Karamos and the white marble at 42.
Yeah.
So those are the only materials you'll get out of that. So you'll see less materials because that's the only two coming out. So now I think at 48, you'll unlock the cobalt blue. And then 51 with the Everlight Cithril and the Stars of Ceridamon, you will start to see more materials.
And the higher level you are, you'll see the higher materials, right?
Exactly. And okay. So you won't see the higher level materials until you have the level to actually which I think is a nice little addition.
Yeah, it is, definitely. Because, I mean, you know, in theory, that'd be a way of saying, hey, let's cheat and get around this. You can just get these materials by doing the sand. All right. And I guess I can ask you this right now. I was going to ask it later in the miscellaneous section. Do you use a soil screener?
Well, of course. Okay. I hit 70. I didn't go back until I went. It is a necessity, I feel. That soil box is horrid.
Yeah, because it only stores up to 100, and then you got to go back and spend a few minutes sifting it. So,
And when you unlock the associate, I think it is, to get the screener, make sure you... I've heard a few people spent the Chronotes and bought the soil box upgrade as well. The soil box upgrade, it kind of goes to the wind when you get that screener, so you don't really need to spend those extra Chronotes on the upgrade.
Uh-huh. Makes sense. All right. Let's talk about tetra compass farming, because this is something I was theory crafting on my own with this. I thought, you know, tetra compasses, you have the chance of giving you something rare. Tetra compasses have the chance of giving you rare materials. Tetra compasses also have the chance of giving you XP tomes. What if somebody, once they had the ability to get all the materials for tetra compasses to power them up, just decided, I'm going to train this skill by farming tetra compasses in terms of completing the collections that give tetra compass pieces? And then I'm going to use the tomes that I get from this to as my source of XP, in addition to going and excavating all the various different colored materials. Because you, for anybody who hasn't powered one up, you need 30 of the malachite green, cadmium red, cobalt blue, armadillion yellow, and Tyrian purple. And these are super expensive. The prices listed on the exchange are merely suggestions, and you're going to see them go for higher than they're actually listed on the exchange.
Yeah, you almost have to sell one individually to figure out what the price is.
Right. And with that, I was wondering, can just going for tetra compasses be a primary way of training this?
I think it's definitely a roundabout way to train it, and it probably could pay off in the long run. It's similar to Curlew Scrolls in that sense, where you are risking wasting your time. But there's also always the chance of getting one of those keys. Those tomes do give pretty good XP, and I think you're guaranteed them between one to three of them. So you can always pretty much guarantee a little bit of XP.
Yeah. And you can also, with that, you know, very easily make your money back. And, you know, as being, I think I was in the early 60s, I only had to buy the green and the yellow. And, you know, with that, I spent about 2 million GP. And I was still able to, you know, come out ahead and, you know, make a million and a half off of one of the tetra compasses. I've also been informed that today they manually updated the prices on the exchange for these, so they're going to be a lot closer to what they actually are than what they were suggesting in the first week or so after launch with that. So, anyways, on the topic of Tetra compasses, they work like a clue scroll, and the ancient casket that you get from them, it works as on the same level of coordinate. You can get, of course, the god pages. You can get elite and master clue scrolls from it. You can also get those archaeology boosts that you were talking about, like the monocles, the material manuals, and the tea, and so on and so forth. You can also get the dragon matic from a ancient casket. This is the other method they mentioned in addition to big game hunter. And, you know, a whole boatload of materials. It's going to choose some materials for you to get. You're going to get 100 of them. You're guaranteed to get 5 sets of 100 materials. It's random which ones you get, but you could get very lucky and, you know, make a fortune off that too. You can also get artifacts, and, you know, there is no level guideline on this, so you might get artifacts that you can't complete until, you know, like level 110 plus. I know someone in Clan Quest said they did one of these compasses and they got an artifact that they can't complete until they're level 118. So there might be that side of it too as well. But it seems like to me, at least from the XP tome side, that if you wanted to go hunting these, this would be another way of training the skill. If you are a clue scroll hunter, this is probably your way to train the skill, I think.
Yeah, I'm guessing like the, I mean, you know, your XP is going to suffer from it. Like, you would
definitely.
But it's going to be slower. But this is like, yeah, this is a gambler's way.
Because you can get the little thing that unlocks the Guildmaster's Matic.
You could.
So, I mean, I think it's definitely a good thing to look into on that. Brew, have you done any Tetra compass farming?
I haven't farmed them, though. I've been kind of trying to do the ones I get. I think I have 4 complete ones in the bank. If you talk about it, I might need to go do them.
Yeah, I mean, it looks amazing on this front here.
I'm using them kind of as bankable tomes. So they're guaranteed tomes. So it's some I don't have to keep in my inventory. So I'll probably hold on to them since they don't kind of, your drops don't suffer. So like kind of like effigies where you get 10 of them, you're done.
Yeah.
I'm kind of just trying to bank them for now.
All right. So after Tetra compasses, I think we can just talk about Iron Man mode, and in particular self Iron Man mode, being self-sufficient in this is that this is definitely a skill that if you want to, you can be self-sufficient. And it's going to be easy to do that, I think.
Oh, easily. And I mean, and honestly, I don't think it feels that much grindier. Because I haven't bought any materials. I mean, that's not saying much. I'm not real high level or anything, but.
And you're not rolling in the dough.
And I'm definitely not that, but I haven't felt like I was grinding really all that much. So. And you get most of them, and then go hit up a cache for like a half hour, and you're good. You know, you're on your way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think y'all are familiar with Rostafa, the Iron Man. I spoke with him about it, and I think he's 95. He's in the mid-90s. And that's what he was kind of saying, how you go and you mine until you got enough artifacts. You go figure out what you can make. And then you loop back around and go maybe hit up a cache. Maybe you got enough XP to move on to the next one. So he's definitely enjoying it as well, I feel like. At least when I spoke to him, it felt like he was enjoying it. And it didn't feel like it was as big of a grind as I feel some people are making it out to be.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So I think I just want to touch briefly on here. We have already, of course, talked about the water fan side of it. Ancient summoning is something you unlock at level 68. That's potentially a money-making avenue as well with it, but there's many other great benefits through doing that, including the gargoyle familiar that'll give you a plus 12 invisible mining boost if you want to do that. invention.
So you can AFK mine again, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Not
exactly.
A problem?
Invention-wise, you mentioned the IMSOL perk on this, and you know that's one I've definitely heard talked about with this. Have you? And I don't know if anybody's actually doing this yet. If anybody's actually making the material crates that you can sell the materials for.
Yeah.
The prices are astronomical.
Yeah, we heard our friends talking about it last night.
All right, and what's the verdict on that?
There's four of them.
Yeah.
And one of them is the ticket.
Yeah.
The classic, which is needed for a lot of the crates of the gizmos themselves. The classics, I think they were selling them the small crate of 100. They were selling for upwards of 45 mil last night. Now, if you get to the historic and the time ones, I mean, you can get a large crate of them for 500K. But you also get 20 of those every time you have a chance to get 20 of those every time you disassemble a completed artifact. So I think the classic ones are definitely the sought after.
Good
and it shows.
Good to know.
It shows.
I mean, this is something that was, you know, I think glossed over when we were talking about the release of this, and because we didn't exactly know what these were going to be used for, and nobody really grasped the gravity of what it would mean to have these sellable on the Grand Exchange. So there we have it. And
there was very few people up there in the clouds to.
They didn't really want to say much on that because you're right. The classic ones are for the the ancient gizmo shells, the tool shell, and the weapon shell, as well as the enhanced rotomatic, the enhanced hammertron, the enhanced pyromatic, and the XP capacitor as well. And, you know, this is something we didn't really talk about last week, is that the enhanced fishing rotomatic makes it work like a level 90. So when you disassemble that, you'll be getting more XP on it.
Nice.
For invention.
Yeah. It feels like it's the skill invention could have been. No, not really. Not really, but still, a little bit.
It's just adding that extra little bit onto invention, I think.
Yeah.
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 All right. Tannis, you have anything else you want to pick Brew's mind about here that would be beneficial for the show? I think I've taken our listeners on a ride through high-level archaeology without them going there.
Yeah. No, I mean, we've talked about it, and that's why I wanted Brew to be on the show, just because I knew he knew how to do this higher level stuff, and with me down here in Scrubville at, you know, high 60s, I guess I'm, what am I?
Yeah, and
68. I did not have those answers.
And I think summing it up, it comes down to use the best excavation site you can. And if you have the money, buy the materials that will top you off. Or if you don't, just go to the material cache to finish it off in terms of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, complete the collections and mysteries as you level up that you have available to you. And combining that with special research, you're going to get a good amount of XP. And it's not going to really feel like a grind, I think, in most cases on that. And that's good. And this is what we largely anticipated last week. So I'm pleased that has held up even through the higher levels.
Yeah. And even in use the highest level matic you can. And if you can't afford it, take a day or two.
Find a way.
Make money. There's plenty of ways of doing that. Like, I don't have a dragon matic yet, but I'm sure we'll change that soon. But there's so many ways to make money off of the skill that there's, you know, it's not that bad.
Ancient summoning, material caches, tetra compasses.
Oh man, yeah. Materials
Lots
themselves.
Yeah, materials.
You know, like,
hell,
sifting
even if you
sand.
Wanted to. Sifting sand. go farm divine energy. Make porters.
Oh, well, yeah.
Diamond necklaces.
Porters are huge right now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Maybe I don't. Let's see. Unchecked. I think cows are going. Flavored cows.
Well,
are still bomb.
Well, too, I mean, and I should clarify by porters. I mean, make too. The constituents for porters because you right, obviously right. can't make porters and sell them. I mean, take the energy, make the necklaces, and do it that way. And you know. I got a message from Trekkie this week. You remember when we talked about the crafting event?
I wondered, dude. Like, how many times I thought about crafting and
he doesn't and do diamond, but holy crap, this is the week to be one of those gold crafters like that.
This guy's been making jewelry since 2005, and it just now paid off. Like, it's a gold mine.
My dragon scale dust also paid off today. Weapon poison threes are selling for 10k plus earlier.
Wow. Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't capitalize off the shiny cows.
I didn't have a breeding set, and I still don't. And I'm still waiting for one person's cow who is listening, Tim, to make something happen here. So, yeah, no shiny cows yet. But apparently the sets of the colored ones were going for 5 mil.
Oh,
after they changed it, yeah.
Yeah, that's cheaper.
Or 1 mil
each.
I'm just gonna
go with the unchecked.
Oh yeah, they're common enough, and you know, if you want it, you can buy the unchecked on the exchange. And for anyone out there farming, that's probably a better way, is just make sure you double up on your breeding pen in terms of two animals with the exact same trait sets, so you're consistently producing the unchecked colored cows. And then your collector will get those, and then you can sell those unchecked colored cows on the exchange, and you don't need to go through the process of going to World 2 and finding someone to do that with.
Cool.
All right. Let's move on to the patch notes then this week, because there are archaeology-themed patch notes in terms of just making some light changes to it. Nothing really that out there, so that's good.
1,500%
Yeah,
buffs.
No invention buffs or nerfs, so that's good.
That's good.
Starting off, inspecting a damaged or restored artifact and filling or inspecting a soil box will no longer interrupt your current action, allowing you to continue excavating uninterrupted.
That's nice. That's
yeah,
nice.
Yeah. And you could do this before if you put your soil box on your action bar.
Yep.
You can now use either a harlequin cow or one of the vanilla, strawberry, and chocolate cows for that archaeology mystery. A tick mark has been added to the archaeology information screen to show if you previously completed any of the associated collections, which is nice at a glance, so you don't need to go into them.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The chance of receiving an artifact from research has been increased. Dr. Navinek's Third Age Expert Researcher perk has been modified to guarantee an artifact after researching 2 hours or more, down from 8 hours or more. The Dwarven Instinct Aura will now spawn magical chests after you've earned XP in archaeology. An Armadillion Yellow material cache at the Stormguard Citadel has been moved to make it slightly more accessible. Different styles of redacted can now be used for the Capricorn portion of the Contract Clause mystery with that. We'll leave that to what it is, because that is kind of a little mini questy kind of thing. The Slayer and Boss collection logs will now open correctly when accessed by the Slayer counter. And now there's a bunch of hot fixes that they fixed prior to the Monday game update. They include fixing an issue where ports voyages were being set to a negative duration while claiming research rewards. Fixed an issue where the player-owned farm trapper was not returning. Fixed an issue that allowed the players to gain pulse score, level boost, and archaeology from the Desert Pantheon aura. This has now been locked behind the skill amnesty period, and of course, you don't want to be buffing archaeology levels willy-nilly during this period. Fixed an issue that allowed the Water Fiend familiar to be summoned for a longer duration than intended. People were probably happy about that, given how expensive they are.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a kicker. Summoning pets will no longer run away if they're following you when you log out.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, could you imagine if you had one of those new shiny Ripper Demons? And they are going to be nerfing the Ripper Demon down a bit because it's too powerful. Here's one for our favorite quest series. A bookshelf on the Archaeology Guild campus that was used to start the Elemental Workshop 2 quest had been lost during renovations. This has been replaced, so it's now possible to start the quest.
What's your favorite quest?
Favorite quest series. One of them. One of them. Yeah. Fixed an issue where players couldn't fletch back Riminal bolts if they already had some in their inventory. And using the Font of Life from your inventory will now correctly bypass the archaeology tutorial, so you could skip that part if you wanted to. Then we got some graphical changes for Yak Track, including stopping the Twilight Pegasus pet from turning invisible in wardrobe view, adjusted the Stargazer's goggles to fit female character models better, adjusted the Yak Track image on the upgrades and interface upgrades and extras interface. And the Equiscape has been reforged with the gold medal shown on the reward image. Then they put the core experience updates that we mentioned earlier in the patch notes as well, so we'll leave that as is. Then a couple of other little patch notes here and there, rounding them out, including Arcane Blood Mage. Polycolors are now shown on the male character head when textures are turned off. The ninjas have had a word with Eagle and the ceremonial sword plans will no longer retain the progress of previous plans. The first plan you receive after this update may still have some leftovers in it, but every other one should be brand new. If you attempt to claim a prize on Treasure Hunter and the promo changes, they will now be able to claim their original prize instead of being given a new one. And the first shop interface has been modernized on mobile, and the spotted cape has been re-added to the store. Which is actually really important given our next piece of news. But that's all we got for patch notes this week. All right. Brew, are you an iPhone user or an Android user?
I'm an iPhone user.
Oh, so you're left out in the cold too with this update.
Oh, no, I use a remote desktop, so I'm just as good as everybody.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough.
I found a way around sticking with the best, you know.
So with this, we got news today that the RuneScape 3 beta for Android is expanding so that all RuneScape players are now going to be able to access the beta on Android through the Google Play Store. So that means that both free-to-play players and members can get their hands on this starting today. All you need to do is download it from the Google Play Store. And if you play during this period, you will get access to the Mobile Founders Pack. But that's not all. That's not all, Tennis. That's not all. They do have some news on iOS. That there will be a limited iOS closed beta launching in the coming weeks. And there will be more details on how you can secure your spot in the near future.
Yes, please. Yes, please. Can't wait.
Yeah, we've been waiting a while for that one. And it'd be interesting to see if they find a way around the 10,000 barrier. Because for Apple's Test Flight program, which is the official iOS App Store beta program, you're limited to 10,000 beta testers for an app. And I can guarantee you that there's going to be more than 10,000 people who want RuneScape Mobile on iOS.
I would imagine.
And I'm not even jumping up and down for it because I want to play it on iOS. I'm doing it because I want to see how it feels, the experience. Because my only experience playing RuneScape Mobile thus far has been at RuneFest.
Yeah, and I'm really, really curious because I use things on my phone for accessibility, and I want to see how that's going
to
interact.
Like to see if you can use your Siri text-to-speech with it?
Well, and just my I have this function where if I touch something, it tells me. Like a tap for me is a double tap. Like everything is a double tap. Because if I just touch it once, it tells me what I'm touching.
Right.
So
for example, if you touch the messages icon, it will say...
It'll read it, yeah.
Okay, got it. I don't know. Being a rendered game, I don't think I would say that it probably wouldn't do that. But we could be wrong on that.
My guess is you're probably right because it's never worked on anything like that before. But you never know. And And other things do sometimes work. Like, you know, iOS does have a built-in magnifier. I think it's like if you tap with three fingers, it'll magnify, pop that up. There's a bunch of accessibility stuff when it comes to your phone. So I'm really, really curious to see which things are going to work and which
things
won't.
I'm wanting to see how it works on the tablet.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, we've been saying for a long time that, you know, it seems like a tablet or an iPad would probably be one of the best platforms to play RS on.
Well, and that's definitely what I will be, like, when I finally have mobile, that's what I'll probably be playing on. But that's also the only tablet we have in the house.
Right.
So, yeah, you know.
Good luck with that.
I know, right? Yeah. It'll be my daughter. She's going to be the one that's not happy about it.
All right. Well, Android users can keep their eyes out and sign up for that. And we'll be keeping our eyes peeled as iOS users to see what happens, too, in the future on this. All right. And with this, we also have a message this week from ModPips in relation to what Jagex's plans are. And, you know, he says we can all play a part together. And this is a message from the CEO on this, and I'm actually just going to play this on the podcast because it's only a minute and 43 long, so we can definitely do that, and I think it's important to hear from the CEO on this. So let's have a listen.
Hey there, Scapers. Even though we've now got coronavirus putting real-world socializing off limits, we don't need to be alone, because living games like RuneScape and Old School offer a place for people to play and socialize together. And that can be a comfort when facing the challenges of isolation or social distancing. So everyone at Jagex is working hard from home to ensure that RuneScape and Old School continue to offer those incredibly social and immersive experiences that you love. And as importantly, we're making sure we're there for each other, supporting one another in this challenging time. And from this, we'll be able to make sure the worlds you love remain open and offer that familiar escape from the worries of the day. So that community spirit between all of us here at Jagex and all of you playing at home is really important to us. The work we've done with mental health charities and the support that you've given them means we understand how important it can be to have those distractions from the real world at times like this. We're providing additional awareness on mental health for our teams and our players so you can stay safe, and we're going to continue to support those mental health charities in their work. Their work is as important now as it's ever been. But it's also important to remember it's not just there for other people. If you're seeking reassurance or mental health advice, our friends at Mind have some important words for you, and you'll find them here. So please be safe, stay home, support each other, because we're all in this together. See you in Gilanor.
All right, there we have it. And, you know, I think that's a good message to put out, you know. It really underscores what everybody is doing with online communities in this day and age, because 1 month ago, I don't think anybody anticipated we would be at this point where the COVID-19 pandemic would have changed the way the world works to this degree that it has. And with Jagex stepping out there, and, you know, I also think that expanding the early mobile access was definitely something that they wanted to do in this regard as well, to help out with that. And we know it wasn't planned this way, but this, we were saying, this is indeed the perfect time to have a new skill launch, isn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. And I mean, one thing I heard the other day, and this makes a lot of sense, it's like we're calling it social distancing, but
it's physical distancing.
It's physical distancing. Yeah. Yes. We don't need to distance ourselves socially. We have a lot of things that can keep us connected. But saying that, is it bad that, as he was saying, you know, how social we are, all I saw was an World 84 chat scrolling in front of me going, you such a bleep,
or a material cache.
Yeah. I was like, oh, Mod Pips, when's the last time you jumped in the game, bud?
But nonetheless, there was something that was missed in the video, that if you read the text of this, They highlight the last year they raised £250,000, more than £250,000 for CPSL Mine, the Prince's Trust, and URRAD. And with this, Jagex will donate a further £100,000 to its mental health charity partners. And he says this is in addition to the already scheduled Mental Health Awareness Week that's going to be happening in May.
That's good. And those have actually been pretty decent outfits, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's I think that's the currency event everybody can get around and not have a problem with, because it's all going towards a good cause.
Yeah, and it goes in your, you know, currency pouch.
Yeah. Oh, you can okay. Oh, you didn't know you can put the eggs from Easter in the currency pouch? Oh, no, there's a right click option, you can.
Yeah, you can, but nobody's like, you don't have the Joker popping up in front of you talking about mental health awareness for you.
Ah! Don't give them any ideas.
Just saying, you know.
All right. In addition to other things that are happening, they're bringing back a special edition of The Drop, which is the in-game quiz show kind of thing with a charity twist. They're also...
Is that the How Fast Can You Wiki game?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
Mental Health Awareness Week in May. Special streamed events are on the way, hosted by Jagex, which is important because RuneFest in the real world isn't happening this year. Which makes sense, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Just because of everything that's going on, and hence the virtual events that they're talking about. And they're also going to be aiming where technology allows to do more live streams for both RuneScape and Old School. And they'll also be running fortnightly AMAs and Discord Q&As with mental charity representatives. And there's also going to be more get-togethers in-game with JMOD attendance.
That's cool. I always thought it was neat when you actually get to see one of them in-game.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I like those events where you would go and they'd stamp your stuff.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think they did one of those last at Valentine's Day, if I'm not wrong with that. So, all right. Let's see. What do I got next on here? Ah, yes. Another cosmetics treasure hunter promo. The cat samurai. I'm not going to dare to say this
meow.
Say it for us. Come on.
The cat Sam Meowrai. There you go.
There it is.
I can imagine that's going to be something with the show title. Oh? What's the question?
Yeah. I don't really have a question. I just wanted to say meow, I have a question.
Oh. All right.
Yeah. All right.
Well, if you look in the news post here, you can see exactly what you can dress this cow up as. Or cow?
Cow. Oh, cow. My God.
Boy, it's could you imagine if it was a cow?
That might be funner. I don't know. Write that down for next time.
Yeah, let's write that down. With this, it's just like the Felix the Cat promo. You unlock, as you spend Treasure Hunter keys, you unlock an armor piece, and there's a chance through Treasure Hunter that you can unlock more pieces with this. And there's also one more thing with this. If you had the Felix the Cat one, you can have the chance at unlocking a new fur texture for Felix, which turns him into, as they say, an elegant blue short hair. But
oh,
there's
you
more.
Mean we get more furry options?
Yeah, there's more. If you don't have Felix, you can pick him up for free on the Oddment store.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I don't know if he'll be dressed, though.
Well, you know.
It's a cat, right?
It's a cat. Yeah.
It's a cat. And you can see the evolution of this, that you get to a point where eventually these promos go past and you'll get the base for free on the Oddment store, but you might be able to purchase old armor pieces on the Oddment store as well. That could be a way they would go if they didn't want to rerun these on Treasure Hunter.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm glad this one seems smaller than some of the stuff I have been seeing lately, and that's good because I think some of the stuff I have seen lately could be about half of its size.
Yeah, like the horse thing from Yak Track, right?
Yeah, and the Yak with the damn telescope on, like, yeah. Everything is just huge. And I think they could literally be half that size, and I think we'd be fine. Because it ain't like we're, like, riding these things, you know.
Have you seen the demon, the Kagarian demon?
It covers, like, a whole excavation site. I'm like...
I have a picture for you. I'll send it. I'll post it in here.
Yeah, please do.
It's terrible.
It's very big.
Yeah, so, and you know, I don't typically advocate people spend on Treasure Hunter, but if this is the kind of thing you want to see from Treasure Hunter, these kind of promos, yep. This is the weekend to buy keys. Dare I say it. We'll wait for Brew to get that picture up, but we'll jump to that after. But before we go on to tech news, I'll just thank our Patreon supporters for this episode, because without you guys, we wouldn't be doing all the fun stuff that we're doing in addition to these episodes. So this week, I'd like to thank 29 Let's Go, Brock H, Cameron, Cass, CGB900, Christian S, Diana, Jade Gizmo, James W, Jason S, Joe M, John P, Kyle, R Memories, Rastafa, Rippeth, Sam W, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you, all of you, for your support. It truly does mean the world to us, and you let us do all kinds of fun things here at RSBNB Update, including our monthly bit, which we just got off of recording. That was a fun one, wasn't it? We learned a bit about the past skill launches in-game.
Yeah, that was cool.
These monthly bits are always excellent learning opportunities for us here as co-hosts, and hopefully they provide that to you, the listeners, as well. And if you want to listen to these, you can. For as little as $1 a month, you can sign up at patreon.com/RSBNB, and there you gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, 20 of them now at this point. And in addition to that, you help fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB and RSBNB Update. We also have the VIP rank for $3 a month. You get a special VIP rank in Discord, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you receive a shout-out each and every week on the podcast, gain exclusive clips that we'll be using on the clip show at the end of the year, in addition to everything else. And we do have our monthly events as well, including the monthly bit, which we just recorded. We also have Inside RSBNB Update, which is effectively a dev blog for RSBNB Update that goes up at the end of the month. Last month's was about updating the RSBNB website for a new skill, which is something we've been doing since Slayer came out way back when, and it's evolved, and it's certainly a feat in its own. So if that's interesting to you, give that a read. And we also have the RSBNB Update Roundtable hosted in the second half of each month, where we get together and just talk about anything and everything RuneScape related. But there's more. One more thing. Movie night on the RSBNB Discord, where we sit and we watch a movie. Last month was Star Trek VI, and I think Tannis has the pick this month, don't you?
Yeah, Shane, and I'm trying to decide if I want to follow your tradition, because you played the first Star Trek movie you'd ever watched. I'm trying to decide if I want to do the first Star Wars I ever watched, because of where it's at.
Or the option is to do something else timely, like Contagion or Outbreak.
I get enough of that shit at 10 a.m. from the Cheeto in Chief every day.
Oh my!
No, thank you.
All right,
I need the force right now, Shane. I need the force.
Well, if this is at all interesting to you, or you want to dive in on the monthly bits or anything else that we just mentioned, patreon.com/RSBNB. For as little as $1 a month, you gain access to everything we just talked about. And if you want to give a little bit more, you can get a few extra little personal perks along the way. So thank you so much, everybody, for supporting RSBNB Update. It truly does mean the world to us. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
All right, so let's have a look at this picture that Brew posted here. And oh, my God. Oh, my God. Familiar is this? This is the...
You see what...
Calgarian demon, the new... The front didn't do it justice. I had to get the side, the profile.
And we're willingly let these things walk around the game.
Yeah. That's in Priv. If you try to, so if you leave the lodestone area to run north, south, east, or west, you have to go through like the kind of archway, you know, the small, right. He does not walk through. He just stands there until you get on the other side. Then he phases through. If you summon him inside of it, he almost gets stuck. He's so big. So I don't know.
That Who definitely thought this was a good idea?
See, that's what I mean, they know people bitched about the Drake, right? Like,
I want to get on him and ride around. Like, he should be a mount.
Right?
Well, that's what it looks like see, the yak is, too.
Right? Well, this is what I was bitching about, Shane. Because I had one of these. There was a yak and, like, two Pegasus. And I'm, like, pissed because I couldn't even see the, like, excavation. Like, let alone the time sprites. Forget about it.
Between the gigantic animals and then these darn eggs over yes. the clickables, you can't. Yes. You have to right. It's a right click game now.
Yeah.
Aye, aye, aye.
It's rough, man.
Aye, aye, aye. Rough. Did the object outlining help you?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Yeah, good. Absolutely.
All right. Let's move on to tech news then. We have some interesting ones this week. So starting off with the good, Google has made Stadia Pro free. So you can play Stadia Pro for free right now, which is Google's streaming service, 14 countries. You get 2 months free. And with this, you don't even need the Stadia Pro controller. The games you have access to are 9 early entry games, including Grid, Destiny 2, The Collection, and Thumper. And if you want to play more games, you can purchase more games as well. And all you need to do is sign up at Stadia.com, download the app on Android or iOS. Then you can also, if you want, play on your laptop or desktop or any other device that you want with your controller or mouse. You could even, as well, if you wanted to, play on your Android phone and project it to a different screen. And if you had a Chromecast, you could even play it on your 4K TV. So Google wants us to dive right into this streaming service. And the catch is, of course, after these 2 months, it goes back to its price of $9.99 a month.
No, well, you know, they're trying anyway.
Yeah. Do you think you're going to give this a go?
No.
No? Okay.
No. I just don't like the way Stadia is set up with having to have the system and buy the game.
Oh, you don't even need the controller if you don't want it.
Well, I know.
You can use any controller.
But you still have to buy the hardware.
No,
right?
No, you don't.
You don't need the Stadia machine?
No. No. You need a Chromecast if you want to play it on your TV. If you want to play it on your computer or your phone, you don't need anything. You can try this for free right now without anything.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, maybe with an expansion of the catalog. Right now, I'm not seeing anything that really interests me that much.
Yeah, let's have a look at what some of the games are on here, because that's, of course, the big question with any of these streaming platforms. Assassin's Creed Odyssey, that's not one of the free ones. They don't say what the free ones are aside from Destiny and Grid, of course. So that's a question. And Thumper, whatever the heck that is. Doom Eternal is on here.
Oh, that's a great game. That is a great game.
Just Dance 2020. Mortal Kombat 11. Red Dead Redemption 2.
Nice, okay.
The Elder Scrolls Online, Tom Clancy's The Division 2, and Tomb Raider The Definitive Edition, amongst others. But yeah, the catalog is still limited on here of what you could do. But if you want to, you know, if you wanted to purchase any of these games, you definitely could. Or if you just want to play Destiny for free, this is an option to do it if your computer doesn't support Destiny as it is. And you see everybody's putting out these offers in the current climate that, hey, we need to maybe reach out a bit and see what we can do on here. All right. Anything else on that one? I don't know. I mean, it's just an interesting thing to start off with, I think. I don't know if it's going to go anywhere.
I'm curious about, like, I would like to try it just to see what its performance is. Because I've tried I've tried the PlayStation version before, and I thought it was pretty good. So I wouldn't mind seeing, like, what Google can do. But
yeah, it's going to use the YouTube. The library at this point. Yeah, that's the biggest downfall with this. It's going to use, of course, the YouTube technology behind it. They say that if you want 1080p, you're going to be using 12.6 gigabytes of data an hour.
Okay.
4K is 20 gigabytes an hour.
Well, that seems like that would get expensive.
Yeah, and this is what they're making for free is Stadia Pro, which is up to 4K and 5.1 surround sound with HDR graphics. So, all right. Next piece of news. Russia has been up to some bad stuff on the internet, guys.
No, that doesn't sound like Russia.
A Russian telco hijacked internet traffic for Google, Amazon Web Services, and Cloudflare, amongst others. The telco was named Ross Telecom, involved something called Border Gateway Patrol, our protocol hijacking, and it impacted up to 200 CDNs and cloud networks this week. It apparently infected or affected 8,800 traffic routes from 200-plus networks and was an issue for about an hour. Other companies, in addition to the ones we mentioned, are Amazon, Facebook, Akamai, GoDaddy, DigitalOcean, Joyent, Leaseweb, Hetzner, and Linode, which is one of the big data centers out there. And, you know, this is something many people aren't aware of, is that BGP hijacks, Border Gateway Protocol hijacks, is something that can be used to effectively take control over the internet. In fact, Pakistan did something like this back in 2012 or 2013, because this is the system that is used to route internet traffic between networks and various nodes around the world. And the article says that this is an extremely brittle system because if any one participant network simply decides to forge itself and lie and publish a fake announcement, it can do that. And the examples would be is that, hey, Facebook servers are on our network, and with this, all internet entities would take this as legitimate and send all Facebook traffic to the hijacker servers.
Oh. Well, that's not good.
Yeah. I bet you didn't know this was possible on the internet.
No.
And this goes back to the internet's founding of, you know, being a series of networks built initially for the defense of the United States, the DARPA program, in that, you know, they thought this is only going to be used for military, so we don't need to bake this in. But over time, this has percolated throughout the entire world and become an issue that is global, and everybody just agrees not to mess with everyone's connections. And if somebody wanted to, all you would need is to have internet traffic that's not encrypted, so not HTTPS traffic, and then you would be able to hijack the packets that were being sent somewhere, like Facebook, potentially run a man-in-the-middle attack, intercept Facebook's traffic, and alter it to do something else entirely if you wanted to. Now, of course, with widespread use of HTTPS secure networks, that is, of course, meaning the little lock that everybody sees up in your web browser, the threat of hijacking has gone down significantly with this. But hijacks can still happen, as we've seen here, as the hijacker can log traffic and effectively scoop in all that traffic that would have been directed to Facebook in the case of the example here. So this is something that doesn't happen that often, but it's happened in 2018 with a Nigerian ISP. It also happened again in June of 2019, where some of the European traffic was mistakenly, they say, routed through China Telecom, which of course is the Chinese state-owned telecommunications operator, which who could see anything wrong with that, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what could go wrong?
And this one in Russia, Rosselcom, is apparently a repeat offender on this. So not all of them are malicious. Some of them can just be accidents by somebody typing something wrong and making a wrong configuration file on this. But it's definitely something that can happen on the internet. And there's a huge in-depth technical explanation on this article as well that you can read through if you want to. And I'm going to stop at this point because I imagine this is the scope that we need for this podcast.
Okay.
So hopefully everybody learned something with this.
Yeah, Russians hack computers.
By accident this week, they say. By accident.
By accident.
Yeah. Alrighty. Next up, we have something for Android users and for some portion of the user base that is indeed blind. This week, today actually on Friday, or Thursday, Google unveiled a new Braille keyboard for typing on Android. And, you know, they mentioned that 150 years ago, Braille was invented, but for people who want to type, you'd need a physical Braille keyboard that would be time-consuming, connect that external device. And this new keyboard is a virtual keyboard that is loaded directly into Android 5 and above. And if you need to type on it and you know how to type with Braille, you can do that. It's going to be a part of any Android operating system out there. And the question I have, and, you know, we always say that Apple is so far on the ahead on the accessibility front. Why haven't we seen anything like this on iOS yet?
It's a good question. And it is a nice development. I want to know how they did it, because right now you have like a little, it's almost like a little tin key type of,
yeah, that's what this is,
device that you have.
So
this, oh, okay. It's not, okay, cool.
Yeah, they say they collaborated with Braille developers, and with this it uses a 6-key layout, 3 on each side, and each one of them represents one of the dots. So to type in A, you would press dot 1, and to type a B, dots 1 and 2 together.
Okay. Yeah,
I don't know if you can read Braille, Tanis. We've never talked about that.
Not proficiently.
Okay. All right. Because, I mean, most days now, if you were reading, you'd just use an ebook or a narrator.
Yeah. Yeah.
You would.
I would. I mean, but I didn't get to go to the School of the Blind. If I had been able to do that, I would know.
Sure.
I was just a little too old when it hit.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. And let's see. Who did they collaborate with? They're calling it the TalkBack Braille Keyboard. They don't say exactly who the developers were, but they did consult with worldwide accessibility experts on this and users with it. So.
Okay.
All right. Let's move on to some other things as we wrap the show up now. We are running our archaeology skill of the month, which is progressing. And, you know, this is a bit of a weird one because people are allowed to enter the skill of the month at any point. So what appears to be the people winning on day one might not necessarily be the people that win at the end, because, Brew, you have signed up and you are currently in the lead with 21.6 million XP gained.
You can blame Tanis. Yeah. I didn't know. I didn't even look until I got something in my Discord DMs.
Second place is PK Mage with 14.6. Mr. Jingles with 13.7. Unknown Raptoid with 13.3. And Derpanu with 9.8.
Yeah. See? That's a good one.
This is what happens when you have a skill of the month where everybody starts from zero.
Hell yeah.
It's excellent.
I wanted to encourage as much participation as possible.
Yeah, we got 27 people signed up.
Yeah, when's the last time that happened?
Right?
Wow, yeah.
And, you know, we'll see if anybody catches you, Brew, but there are definite races going on at the various echelons of this competition. So it's certainly a fun one to watch.
I'm going to get you, Shane.
And we're only 11 days
I'm
in.
Coming.
We're only 11 days in.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to sign up, just head on over to rsbnb.com/skotm. Skill of the month. Yeah, I'm in 20th position right now with 654K.
Coming for you, Shane.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. We'll see what happens over the weekend.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Fighting word.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Too.
I'm going to be gone one of them nights. All right. I'm coming.
All right. Speaking of things people have been up to, let's do the achievements this week. Starting off on April 8th, we had Cledio with 99 mining, Malinoric with 99 archaeology, our first tracked 99 archaeology of the combined RSBNB and Clan Quest communities. Too bad, Brew, you didn't sign up on the forums and get your name in here. We could have read yours out as well on this, but that's fine. We also have Hemsky with 99 mining on April 7th, R3PO with 99 fire making on the 7th, Alex43 got 120 dungeoneering on the 6th, and then Madhouse SC with 99 ranged also on the 6th.
Nice. Nice job, everybody. We also have CubeBond 008 with 99 Hunter on April 6th. We have Ripith with 99 Fishing on April 6th. Ripith again with 99 Invention on April 5th. Not a coincidence. And we have Jade Core with 120 Farming, Shane, on April 4th.
Nicely done.
They also, Jade Shore also got 120 Herblore on April 4th. Lanakia got 99 Hunter on April 4th. Stinky Pete 22 also achieved 99 Attack on April 4th. R3PO with 99 Thieving on April 3rd. Jade Shore with 200 mil Construction on April 2nd.
Constitution.
Constitution?
Yeah.
On April 2nd. Good work. And Lanakia with 99 Fishing on April 2nd.
Nicely done. Nicely done, everyone.
Good job.
All right. I have a pick of the week this week. And, this is a pick of the week that I'm going to do in a way that I will not get yelled at by certain members of our friend group and community on here. So the pick of the week for this week is a game called Deep Rock Galactic, which, Tanis, you said you've heard of. This game was released back in 2018. It's got quite the community around it. It's a little indie game, cooperative FPS for 1 to 4 players. Very bright, given the way it works, but I'll get into that in terms of what the game is. You can pick it up on Steam. And the idea behind this is that this is a cooperative FPS survival game. You are a series of space dwarves mining an underground environment on their moon. The caves are procedurally generated, and, you know, as with any survival game, you have to survive the hordes of monsters. And in this case, it's not zombies, it's actually alien bugs. And there's 4 different classes within the game that are tailored to however you want to play. We have the scout, we have the driller, we have the engineer, and then I'm forgetting the 4th one. I don't remember what the 4th one is. I haven't played that one yet. But all the classes are interesting, and they synergize so nicely with one another. And the reason I say this is that if you look at the engineer, it has platforms that it can deploy to get up to access areas that are hard to mine. It's got turrets like, for example, the Heavy in Team Fortress 2 or Torbjorn in Overwatch. And I've been informed, thank you, Magic King, that the 4th is the Gunner, which is the one that I forgot. And the engineer is the first one that I leveled up. There's other characters as well. The scout, for example, has a grappling hook. One of them also has a zip line that allows you to get around within the cave. And this is important because we're talking about sheer cliff faces here. So it's something that you can't just do on your own, because if you go in on your own as an engineer, you're going to need to create platforms. But if you have a scout with you, the scout can get up and use the zip line to get around, their grappling hook. Or if you had the gunner with you, you could use the zip line as well to get around with this too. And see, this is the thing. I think we are, in general, in this day and age, in a deficit of games that are cooperative. in terms of fighting against a specific objective. And, you know, there's no shortage of survival games out there, from 7 Days to Die to Left 4 Dead and whatnot. And personally, I find those games kind of silly because they all deal with zombies. And let's be honest here, zombies aren't a real thing. Sure, they're fun to go up against, but is that something you really want to be doing time and time again? I don't. And that's why, as a survivalist game, Deep Rock Galactic is actually something that has appealed to me. Initially, I didn't think it wouldn't because of the survival aspect, but I actually do quite enjoy it. So it's a game that you can find on Steam for $29.99, and that's the pick of the week.
Right on.
So if you're looking for something to play or something to play with some friends, this is definitely something to pick up. All right. What have we been up to on RS? Let's start with you, Tanis.
Archaeology. And archaeology. And then while I'm done with that, I'm going to do some archaeology.
All right, fair enough. Brew, do I even need to ask you?
Same thing. Same thing.
All right. Same thing for me as well. Since we know you're level 104, we talked about that earlier. Tanis, what level are you currently?
68.
Okay, I'm 68 as well. So you are catching up. So that's where we're at. I completed all the mysteries in the Infernal Source, so that was fun. Unlocked Ancient Summoning. That's good. And, you know, the more I listen to the podcast that we produce, I'm more inclined to play archaeology more than I already have been. So I feel good about that. But I don't think I have much else to say on that, about archaeology. Everyone else good?
I'm good.
Yep. Appreciate y'all having me.
Yeah, of course. It was great having you. Good to learn about the high end of the skill. That's something we definitely did want to do. So thank you for providing your insight on that. And with that being said, as I mentioned earlier, if you want full show notes, you can find that at update.rsbnb.com. Or if you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can do that on any number of podcast listeners out there. Just head on over to update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. So with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for another episode. Take care, everyone.
See ya.